From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. On this episode of our Justice Warrior season, I have a really interesting guest who truly is a Justice Warrior. She is not only producing a great investigative podcast with nearly 50 episodes, but that investigative podcast is not investigating any old case. She's actually investigating the murder of her own father. I want to welcome to the show Madison McGee of the Ice Cold Case podcast. Madison, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I've been super excited to talk to you for a couple. You know, we were going to try to hook up a couple weeks ago, but you had to go to South by Southwest. Tell me about that. How was that experience?
It was amazing. It was my first time. I had a great time. It was amazing. I have been to some festivals kind of similar, but nothing like this. Austin's such a like groovy, kind of funky place. And just the marriage of like tech and film and music and now podcasting. And there's just all kinds of things going on there. It was really fun and exciting to be a part of.
Yeah. So were you there representing the show or were you just there as a spectator?
Yeah, I was there representing the show. I participated in some podcast events and different things sort of on the podcast side. And then my regular life, sort of my, I don't know, when a superhero is just a normal person, I work in film and TV and in comedy. So there was a lot of people I work with participating in the festival. They had films premiering there. And so I got to hang out with them and kind of be around for that. So that was fun.
That's awesome. I was prepping for the interview doing research. And when I looked up your trip to South by Southwest, it showed your beautiful picture on the red carpet right next to a picture of the beautiful Anna Kendrick on the red carpet. I'm like, well, I'm already jealous. Look at all these people that you were hanging out with.
Very, very fun. It was a fun time. Yeah, I feel really lucky to sort of exist in two very fun worlds. So
what's that like? So I guess first let's talk about your background a little bit, because, you know, as I was listening to your podcast, hearing about your background, like I love that you are kind of self-taught, that you've like worked your way into this industry by teaching yourself how to do things. So like, what is you said film, you've created documentaries. So yeah, tell us about your background.
Yeah. So creator in the truest form, I guess. I always wanted growing up to be a filmmaker, producer, director. That was always the dream and the goal, and still is in a lot of ways. And so I moved to LA to do that. Like that was what drew me to the city and kind of the glitz and glam of that life. And so growing up in West Virginia, there is no film school. There's no template. Mm-hmm. My neighbors aren't like huge filmmakers. And so you really have to kind of find your way into that world and teach yourself a lot of stuff because you're just not around it in the same way that you would be if you grew up in a bigger city that had access to a lot of different things. And so I taught myself sort of that side of it. And then with podcasting, which is even more different than filmmaking, and audio is just a completely different game. And at the time, video podcasts weren't a thing. So you're really playing towards like a listener and not, you can't rely on visuals at all. I had to teach myself that. But I was sort of familiar with teaching myself something that was just a very different thing. And so diving into that and learning gear and connecting things and audio levels and mixing and mastering, it was a whole different ballpark. But yeah, I just taught myself as I go, learning from people who are willing to help me, watching a lot of YouTube videos and yeah, figuring it out.
Anytime I'm listening to a podcast or somebody that comes from like the documentary world, it always makes such a better experience. And yours is no exception to that, where, you know, you're mixing the narration with interview clips. It seemed like you never really said, unless I missed it, like in the credits, that it seemed like you used like a lot of like voice actors to do like the phone calls and 911 calls. Was that what resources did you tap in to do all that? Am I right? Were those were like mostly like recreated?
Some. So there were some things I just didn't have access to. So I had the transcripts to the 911 calls, but I didn't have the recordings. And I called and called and called, and they just don't have them anymore. And then there were some things like I would do hours and hours of interviewing with someone who at the very last minute would say, you can't use my interview in your podcast. So I'm like, okay, well, I want to, and I already have it. So I'll just have someone do exactly what you did, and we'll just put that out just to kind of get around the legality of, you know, using someone's audio or whatever. And so it happens sometimes. And yeah, it was friends. Like, hey, can I send you this? Just voice memo it on your phone and send it to me or whatever. I had some friends who were like true professional, like voice actors, who would send me like more polished clips. And even then, sometimes I'd be like, can you just do it on your phone? Because it sounds grittier and I need it to be a little bit more gritty right for the show. But yeah, it was just like friends being like, hey, can you help me out with this or whatever. I had one friend who's actually like a very established actor, and I'm sending him like paragraphs. I'm like, can you be a cop? Can you be a cop really fast? And like just sending him like these things. It's very funny.
Yeah, it was really well done. And it's interesting. So there's a lot of discussion I want to have around, like, because you bring on this up a lot in the podcast about, you know, like the ethics of like what you're doing. So like what you just mentioned, like, that's something that, you know, has happened to me. It's happened to a lot of us creators, right? So we, you know, we go out and we interview somebody, we start to put our rundown together, and then somebody's like, can you just not use that? And you honored that. Was there, like, how did you come to that decision? Because, you know, it always felt to me like, listen, you agreed to the interview, we recorded the interview, you knew you were being recorded, like, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube afterwards. I've gone both ways sometimes, where I've had, like, I'm sorry, like, you gave me a release, you recorded the interview, I'm going to use it. A lot of it depends on their motivation for doing it. If it's like, I'm worried for my safety, obviously I'm not going to do it. But if it's like, oh, I said something stupid that's incriminating to myself, like, well, you probably shouldn't have done that. So I've gone both ways with it. Like, did you just decide, like, anybody who said, I don't want you to use it, you just pulled it?
No, there was sort of like a hierarchy of needs for that decision. It was a lot of the times, like, who is a person that I'm trying to maintain rapport with? Is this someone that I want to talk to again? So I don't want to make them upset because I might need to speak with them another time or another 10 times. And so I need to build and establish this sort of honor code with them where it's like, hey, I'm looking out for you. I'm not going to put this in there. But like in 6 months when I call you with a question, I'm going to need you to answer the phone. And so that was a sort of motivating factor for a lot of them. Some of them, it felt sort of inconsequential. Someone is identifying a character, establishing someone's identity or like their background. And so it's like, well, that could be a voice actor. It doesn't really matter. It could be anybody. As long as you're getting sort of the information, it doesn't really matter. Certain people that I knew I would want their voice throughout, they would be a constant person that I would be talking to. And I wanted to make sure that their voice didn't change, almost like when you watch a pilot of a show and then the person cast as the mom is different in episode 2. I didn't want that. Right. So there were some times where I had to make really tough decisions. One of those that really stands out to me is there's an interview I did with someone who works at the Belmont County Sheriff's Department. And kind of ironically, I was in Austin at the time that we had our phone call. And Texas is a one-party state, and so is Ohio. Now, had I been in California, it would have been a little trickier. California is a two-party state. So I was on a trip for comedy, and I happened to be in Austin, and they called me that day. It was like the day I landed, just like such an ironic sort of twist of fate. And I would have recorded the call anyways, just for internal purposes, but I had it and I wanted to release it. And multiple times throughout the call, they were like, I don't want you to put this in your podcast. I don't want to be on your podcast. And if you listen long enough, you'll hit the episode where they are in fact on the podcast. So yeah, you just kind of, I knew that bridge was sort of already worn. And so it was sort of a non-starter for me. I was going to put it out.
Right. And just real quick, for those of you listening, if you don't understand one party, two party, that it's something we, anytime we're recording stuff, whether I'm doing it for the podcast or for my PI work. So a one party state means you're allowed to record any conversation that you're a part of. So as long as one person in the conversation is consenting, you can record it. I can't leave a microphone in a room and record somebody else's conversation. But in a two-party state like California, you can't record anything unless everybody in the conversation is aware that it's being recorded and they all consent to it. So that's just a little, if you didn't know what that meant.
Poorly named, I feel, but yes.
yeah, exactly. So throughout we probably should back up for the, I'm talking is because I've listened to a bunch of the podcasts already, but some haven't. So this is a story. It's not a story. You're like this is
my life.
The podcast itself is really just like going on this journey with you. And it's, and we're hearing you grow and stuff along the way, but it's all related to your father's 2002 murder. So I guess let's kind of back up and give us kind of the base facts of the case that you're working with.
Yeah. So when I started, it was, hey, by the way, your dad didn't die of a heart attack. He was murdered. Nobody solved it. And yeah, kind of weird. Anyways, what do you want for dinner? That was like, that was the beginning of this.
And how old were you when that happened?
So I was 6 when my dad was murdered, and I was 16 mm-hmm. when I found out the truth. So there was this 10-year right. gap of me living my life thinking like my dad died of a heart attack, worried that like, is this genetic? Am I going to get blood clots when I'm older? Like thinking about things mm-hmm. that now are like not real. It's such a weird kind of thing. And then I found out the truth. And then it was even more time before I really started diving into this as I just grew up. I was 16, processing, going to college, et cetera. But once I really sat down to like think about it, it was during the pandemic and everything was shut down. And I had a lot of time on my hands just to think about life and whatever. And so I started calling around trying to get info. And it took a long time for me to actually get stuff. But once I got everything, air quotes, I started to really unpack kind of just the general timeline of what happened, which was my dad lived in this very tiny town in Bridgeport, Ohio, next door to his sister. So pretty typical kind of like small town vibes, like your sister lives there and your brother lives down the street and your cousin lives around the corner and everyone's kind of close by. So his sister lived next door. His sister's son lived with her still. He was probably 21, 22 at the time. And so my dad and my sister are at home. It's very early in the morning. It's 6 in the morning, but it's summer, so it's sunny outside. So just for context, because every time I was mm-hmm. imagining this story in the beginning, it was dark, but it's right. not dark. It is very bright outside because it's July 11th. So we've just had summer solstice. We have the longest days of the year happening right now. And the sun is in the sky at 6 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So next door to my dad's house at Pearl's, his sister's house, at around 6 a.m., these guys break into the house. 4 of them break in. Pearl's son, Omar, is there, and Omar's girlfriend, Kim, is there. So there's 3 people in the house. Pearl is asleep in her room, and Omar and Kim are in the living room. And these guys break in. They tie them up with phone cords, and they're there for a long time. They're looking for money. They're ransacking the house. They mention a safe. They put all 3 of them face down on the ground. They're looking for money. They're threatening them, et cetera, for about 35 minutes, which is a very long home invasion, considering the average home invasion is like 60 to 90 seconds. So it was a long time for them to be there. And at some point, they take Omar outside. Omar is outside for what people are estimating about 5 minutes with these guys before a gunshot is heard. Now, over at my dad's house, what's going on is they've gone over to his house. They've gone up the steps to the front door. My dad at this point has heard some scuffling outside, so he's headed towards the front door. He's not quite there yet. He's about 6 feet away. When the door is kicked in, my dad is shot 1 kill shot to the head, falls to the ground. My sister hears all of this, waits about 45 to 60 seconds, comes out, calls 911. These people are already gone. So on paper, it's a very sort of weird, there's this home invasion where no one's injured and nothing's stolen. And then there's a non-home invasion at all. They didn't even enter my dad's house, but my dad is shot dead. They're gone. No one sees them. The people in the house that they ransacked can't identify them. It's a very strange situation. And that's all I knew. That was like what I was given. And it was like, yeah. Okay, and good luck. Have fun. It felt like I was in like some escape room or something. And I now live in this escape room.
I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads. So as you start to break down, you're doing your investigation on the podcast, and I want to kind of talk about that process of the evolution of what you're doing. But I just have a burning question, only being, you know, half a dozen episodes in, because, you know, we learned pretty early on that Omar calls 911, but he does it from like down the road, like he dipped, and mind you, his girlfriend and his mother, right, are tied up inside the house.
Yeah.
And he eventually calls 911, and it's funny because as I'm, and I love how like very real you are on the podcast, because I'm listening to it, I'm like, what a punk. Like his girlfriend and mom are tied up inside, there's these dangerous men, and he just ran away. And then you say on the podcast something pretty close to that extent, or somebody does, that's like what kind of coward just runs away and leaves everybody. I'm just curious, as it goes on, you know, I know there's a lot more episodes left, but is Omar ever redeemed?
Depends on how you look at it. I don't know. He's an interesting character. You feel for him in the ways that it's really unfortunate that anyone is sort of put in this life and this lifestyle, and you can't control the environment that you grow up in and sort of are around. But you really can't help but hate the guy, because he knows everything and holds every answer to every question. And regardless of the trauma endured by his life and his situation, you wonder how anyone could live this long and not say something. And so I think no matter what he does or says, you really can't help but shake that chip you have on your shoulder for him. And at least in my situation, I have a lot of moments of empathy for a lot of characters in this story. And you'll sort of hear and see that play out. There are people I should not be hugging or feeling for or having any sort of amount of empathy towards that I just can't help but feel that way for them. But that doesn't change the fact that they're all at least partially responsible or have all of the answers to unlock my dad's case. So,
and this becomes really complicated for you because you're related to a lot of these people. You know, we like Omar is, let me do the math, your cousin, right?
My cousin.
He's a cousin.
Yeah, we share blood. It is very weird. I mean, I've always felt a little strange about the idea of family, just because, you know, I never grew up really close to my family. My mom and I sort of have like an interesting arm's length love for each other. So the idea of like sharing blood, is blood thicker than water, is a question that's sort of asked throughout the show. I think you choose your family. I think you pick who you care about and who you love and who you're sort of drawn towards. And I don't think you really owe anyone anything just because you are related to them. And that is like a common theme throughout the show, is this idea, sort of what you asked before, like, do I protect people? Do I honor their requests just because these are my family? No, I don't think so. Right. But it does make it complicated, because as I get older, family is something that I do care about and I want to care about, and I want to grow a family and I want to have a family. And so it's a very complicated situation. And yeah, it really make me question a lot about what I believe, my own moral compass, my core values, what's important to me. All of that was being challenged as I was sort of fighting for justice. And that's a very weird pot to be stirred around in, because sometimes fighting for justice means you're like going against the grain and like kind of challenging your own moral compass a lot. And I had to really identify, like, where's my line?
I want to know how much of what is revealed to us, the listeners, was revealed to you in the process, or how much did you already know? Because one of the things that I found really intriguing is that as you're like unpacking the story and launching into investigation, you're also revealing a lot about like your dad and your family. Because, you know, your dad had a lot of demons, it sounds like. And part of that is he has a lot of kids. Like, you have siblings, many siblings from many different mothers.
Yes.
All over the place. Like, were you aware of all, or is, when you were started investigating, were you like learning all these things about your dad, or did you already know most of that?
I learned most of it. I knew about Alyssa. We knew each other. She was like, I knew her growing up. I knew about Shane a little bit. I knew I had a younger brother. I knew I had older siblings. I didn't really know much about them. So I kind of knew a little bit of that. But again, the context of like, they all have different moms and like all of that, I wasn't aware of because I was so young. But a lot of what I learned about my dad and his lifestyle and what he was involved in, I learned as I was doing this. And so, you know, there's a story about a brothel and my little brother potentially allegedly being sold sort of on this like undermarket through an adoption, illegal adoption ring. I learned all of that. I learned that story actually while I was in the car driving from Portland, Oregon to Charleston, West Virginia at like 4 a.m. while I was on the phone with my mom to stay awake while I was driving. Like, that's the story she told me. So it's like, I'm learning all of this like at like crazy times, like while I'm in the middle of investigating this case. And yeah, it was wild.
Did you have any moments or any time during this process where you just were overwhelmed enough where you thought about stopping? Because that's a lot. That's a lot, you know, between like the work of investigating, the work of writing the story, the work of producing the podcast. You're just like tapping into and exposing your own trauma the entire fucking time. Like, was there ever a moment where you were like, fuck this, I'm done?
Oh, every day. I had a woman who's a good friend of mine. She also works in podcasting. She was actually, ironically, we met through doing this kind of, her very good friend from high school was my very good friend in college. And when I started looking into this, he was like, oh, you got to call my friend. I think she works for a company that does this. And she worked for a very large true crime podcast company. And so we met through doing this, just asking her questions and whatever. And now we're friends. But a couple of years ago, we were just chit chatting. The show was sort of at its center point, kind of. And she was like, oh, I'm just so curious. Like, if you could do anything differently, what would you do? And I was like, oh, I just wouldn't do it at all. That would be the thing. I just wouldn't do it. And so, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of times where I was like, what have I done? I still sometimes I wake up and go, gosh, what have I done? It's almost like you've created a Frankenstein in a way. And, you know, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. I mean, that's how I feel. It's tough. And there were a lot of moments where, I mean, I think the ending was sort of the manifestation of me feeling like I was at that point where it was like, it's not productive right now for me to continue publicly living this way. And so now I'm at a point where I am more privately exploring and investigating the case, and we'll come back with like an update here and there if and when there are updates. But yeah, it's a lot to like just feel like you're really exposed to the world in a way that is really jarring. I mean, it's not like I am exposing some sort of like cute little thing that's happened to me. It's like, this is the darkest type of thing you could really showcase. So yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. And in true crime podcasts generally tend to generate a lot of true crime podcast listeners on social media, having all sorts of opinions and saying all sorts of things. Tell me about, because I didn't have to ask if it was, because I know him. I'm sure it happened. That happened. What can you think of off the top of your head, the most negative experience you've had interacting with someone you didn't know on social media because of the show? And then what was the most positive?
So I don't really respond to anything. I read, I shouldn't say this, but I do read everything. and I shouldn't, but I do. And I don't respond to any like negative. I don't like to participate in like the internet arguing. It's just not my thing. And mm-hmm. I spiral and it's just not good for me. And so I just like, I read them and I kind of move on. But there have been a lot of really amazing things that have come from it. I mean, some of the most negative comments have come from my own family. There are strangers mm-hmm. that say all kinds of crazy things, but some of the worst things have come from like my actual family, which I find ironic and kind of funny. But yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of also really beautiful connections and people. I've met so many people that have similar situations or have been through something or need help or are willing to help and they've never been through this before. It's really been beautiful, the community that's been formed around this story and what's happened, and people who have kind of just become lifelong friends. I mean, there's one person in particular I can think of that I went to CrimeCon in 2024 and I was approached by their PR team, who now they are my friends. I can't help but collect friends everywhere, but they reached out and they said, hey, there's a writer from Thrillist who wanted to follow someone around CrimeCon and we kind of threw your name out. Would you be interested? And I was like, sure, that's fine, whatever. So I meet this woman on day one. Her name is Ophelia. And the longer you get into the show, you start hearing her name in the credits because she becomes part of the team. And she is an incredible journalist and she's absolutely amazing. And she's like my very good friend now. And it was all because she was kind of my royal minder all around CrimeCon one year, like just following me around, writing down everything I did and interviewing mm-hmm. me. And we stayed in touch and she felt really passionate about the story. And now we're, you know, very good friends and also, you know, collaborators and we work together. And yeah, there's just been so many examples of that where people who just felt really impassioned by the story that then were like, how can I help? What can I do? And now they're friends. And it's been really, at a time where I felt very lonely and isolated, it was really beautiful to sort of find these people in places that I wasn't expecting.
That's awesome. Like building all those relationships. Like there's always like these unforeseen. Did you expect anything like that to be happening when you put this out that I'm going to meet lifelong friends and all these people that maybe have shared similar situations and we can help each other?
I never thought anyone would listen to the show. I mean, let's be real.
That's how we all are, right?
We hit publish, me and my friends, and it was like, okay, what's our 100 people listen total ever? Mm-hmm. Like, that sounds pretty cool. 100 people. Like, if we put 100 people in this room right now, it'd be full. And so, yeah, I never ever imagined it would turn into, yeah, friendships, relationships. Like, I had no idea.
I'm sure you, especially being at places like CrimeCon and stuff, like people come to you and they resonate with your story. They maybe have similar situations. I'm sure people have brought to you, like, I have this situation too. Has this, like, do you see this being something in your future where you maybe would take on helping to tell other people's stories and investigate their cases in the future?
Yeah. So currently I've just launched a new show called Frozen Files, which covers new cold cases every week. And sort of as a result of that pivot, I've been approached by a couple people who have stories that I do feel like maybe there's work I could do on diving a little bit deeper than just a mm-hmm. single episode. And so I have a couple cases right now that I am lightly looking into without saying too much. And you know, I think my superpower in this is my curiosity asks all the right questions to sort of poke at the right things. But also, I'm really loud and annoying and good at marketing in a very like Taylor Swift kind of way where I'm like, okay, this isn't the thing, but I can market it like this and maybe it'll build traction in that way. So I think there are a couple cases that I have on my desk right now that could benefit from that line of thinking. And so kind of figuring out like what do we create? What do we make that can get your case the same type of publicity that my dad's case got, where it's a little bit non-traditional, but it gets people talking. And so, yeah, I'm working on that at the moment, sort of on the side.
This true crime podcast space, it just grabs you and just sucks you into it.
Yeah. And I'm a very, like, I come from this TV and film world. So now I'm looking at, okay, how do I pivot that? Like the shows that I'm thinking about doing now with these specific cases that are a little bit more of a deep dive would be fully visual. So they would be like almost like documentaries. And because that's just like, I want to get back to that world. And I think that's where my like true passion really lies, is in like visual storytelling. And so, yeah, figuring out how to take the skill set I've learned through podcasting and create these video podcasts that aren't video podcasts, but more like documentaries that you can listen to in the car and tell these stories and help these people. And so kind of figuring out what the marriage of all of that is so that I don't totally lose myself in the podcast world, because that's something I really want to be aware of, because I want to win an Oscar. So it's like, okay, I got to get a camera in my hands and we've got to start making stuff again. So yeah.
That's awesome. I love the idea. And I've often wondered especially in the last few years, where you're starting to see podcasts doing more and more video work and more, you know, whether they're conversational or whatever, they're starting to make video versions of their podcasts. It's like, when do documentaries and documentary type podcasts like merge together? Because what's great about, you know, what's happened over these years is that there's like this space for independent creators to just create. Like, you don't have to go convince some big production company and some big studio to buy a project and to fund it. Like, you can just go out and make it and put it out there. And yeah, I think often your podcast was one of those, especially I think because you mentioned that you come from documentary filmmaking or in filmmaking in general, is, man, this would be so cool to like be able to see some of this stuff instead of just hearing it. But the trick will be, as you mentioned, like telling the story in a way to where someone could just listen to it. If you know, if they're in their car or whatever, but they also could have the video version. I can't wait till you do this, because it'll be a tricky, I'm just thinking as a writer myself, like, how do you write that? How do you write it so it could be all audio, but also the visual element makes sense?
Yeah, totally. It's going to be a challenge for sure. And probably the hardest part of this, you know, the gathering the information, I'm not new to that now. So, you know, talking to people and interviewing them and getting on a plane and flying to wherever I'm going, that part's easy. It's now figuring out sort of the, once you have it all, putting it together. And that's a challenge I'm really looking forward to honor these stories in the best way possible and tell this story in the best way possible. But yeah, it'll be a fun challenge. And I think it will help empower, like you said, other creators to do the same and sort of pivot into this format, but also people whose stories are sort of getting passed up by major streamers and, you know, they feel really hopeless because no one's listening to them. Hopefully we can create a way for their stories to be told as well. And that's, you know, these two stories that I have right now are family led, but the families just don't have the interest to do what I did, which was like put yourself kind of at the forefront of it. And right. So it's like, okay, great. I'll take on that burden for you and you'll still be able to tell your story. And I think that's the key.
Well, I've managed to make it now like 35 minutes without spoiling anything, I think, from the podcast. There's always a trick when I'm doing these. Before we wrap up, I do want to touch on it because this has been such a journey for you. And you know, we've talked about like you're kind of learning and diving into your own past and family. You're also investigating this cold case. But you're also kind of going after the systematic flaws in the criminal justice system along the way, too. Can you talk about like what that's been like? Where have you seen, was there anything that surprised you along the way about how the system itself works?
Oh, yeah. You know, in recent years, I'm not naive to like the flaws of the system by any means, but you know, really in recent years, it's been very much at the forefront of what's been going on. And just, we're all so much more hyper aware. Whereas even 10, 15, 20 years ago, small towns felt safe, full stop. And people weren't locking their doors and people trusted their community leaders to like protect them. And you weren't anticipating the level of corruption that was happening and that could happen because of the lack of oversight. Those things weren't crossing your mind. You were just going about your day, yeah, living your life. And they were impacting other communities, but like I wasn't really part of those communities. So it's not in your forefront every day. And the more I was diving into this, the more illuminated it became just how little oversight there is for the people at the top. And we're talking on a grand scale, but we're also talking in like the middle of nowhere, maybe even more so in the middle of nowhere. And that's what's really scary is, as I started looking into this, people were hitting me up with stories of corruption in this tiny, tiny county, going back several sheriffs, going back several decades. Like, this is not new to this town, but it's something that people really weren't talking about. And I think the biggest thing is like, if you've got a badge and you've got a gun, you can kind of get away with anything, including murder. You can speed. If you go over 20 miles an hour, you could be arrested for reckless driving. Trust me, mm-hmm. I've been pulled over for speeding and I've been threatened with that. But that's like, you get arrested, you get a mugshot. Like that whole process happens to you potentially if you're going over 20 miles over the speed limit. If you're a police officer, you can drive as fast as you want, whenever you want, and no one is going to do anything. And it's like, that's a small scale version of that. But that just shows the type of above the lawness that's happening. You can literally do anything. I mean, you see it on TV shows like, oh, if a cop is at a bar and they are drinking and something bad happens and then another cop shows up, they're like, get out of here. It's like that type of like brotherhood. They're looking out for each other. And it seems harmless at the time. It seems like, I'm just helping my buddy out. Like, wouldn't we all do the same thing? But then once you've pushed that envelope further and further and further, and then it's your buddy got in a car and he hit someone. Oh, and you're going to let him go. It's like that, you push that envelope so far and then something really bad happens and you're like, well, I can't get my friend in trouble. And that lack of oversight is crazy because there's no one above them going, hey, you shouldn't have done that. Or, hey, you did that and now you're in trouble for that. And I think that's what I noticed in my dad's case was I kept being confused because I was like, well, they didn't tape off the scene and they didn't swipe for fingerprints. And where is the evidence they collected? And why did it get thrown away? Or why is it missing? Or where did it go? And why did they do all this stuff? Who's going to, if I don't do my job at work, someone comes down and says, hey, you didn't do your job. We're writing you up or you're getting a notice or whatever. Who does that for them? What's that version of that? And that does not exist. And I think that's where I started to see just how finicky the justice system is and that justice is a subjective term. It is not an objective term. And there's a lot happening in courtrooms across America today, yesterday, tomorrow, that do not feel fair, but there's no one to really say that's wrong or that's right because there are people who are human beings making these decisions that go, well, I feel like this today and I feel like this is the right thing to do today. And sometimes that's not justice at all.
Yeah. And it seems like the, you know, one kind of light at the end of that tunnel is that check and balance is now, you know, over the last decade or so is becoming ordinary people like you and me and the people in our audiences and all the other creators that are finally holding people. They're exposing what's happening and holding them accountable. And that's one of the great things about your podcast. Guys, I want you to go check out Ice Cold Case. You did wrap up your season finale in January this year. There's plenty to binge on. There's nearly 50 episodes. There's like 27 main episodes. And then there's a bunch of bonus episodes in there too.
Yeah, you'll hear from, if you like true crime, you'll hear from all kinds of your favorite people in those bonus episodes, which is an honor. And yeah, they give their takes and it's really interesting.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to finishing that binge. I've got a long train ride tomorrow that I'll be listening to some of it. And then also, I didn't realize we have a new podcast you can check out. Check out Frozen Files. Is that what you said the new podcast is called?
Yeah.
So that's more short form with other cold cases. And so there's plenty for you to listen to. Madison, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me today, and can't wait to finish your story.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kate Woodyomnik, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.